Today is Friday, June 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the White House announces $50 billion in new tariffs against China. What will be its effect?
It's an unambiguous negative. The only question is how negative.
Plus, sources tell VOA that the leader of the Pakistani Taliban has been killed. We have the details. The president speaks out on the Hillary Clinton email investigation and a new scientific report on Antarctic ice and rising sea levels. It's all ahead today on International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump has approved a plan to impose punishing tariffs on tens of billions of dollars of Chinese goods. In a White House statement, the president said, in light of China's theft of intellectual property and technology and its other unfair trade practices, the United States will implement a 25% tariff on $50 billion of goods from China that contain industrially significant technologies. This includes goods related to China's Made in China 2025 strategic plan to dominate the emerging high-technology industries that will drive future economic growth for China, but hurt economic growth for the United States and many other countries. The United States can no longer tolerate losing our technology and intellectual property through unfair economic practices. Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang from China said on earlier Friday that China will immediately retaliate against any move by the United States to impose punishing tariffs.
Early this April, spokespersons of both the Ministry of Commerce and Ministry of Foreign Affairs made formal responses to the U.S. remarks and unilateralist practices. China's position is consistent. I want to reiterate that if the U.S. takes unilateral and protectionist measures that harm China's interests, we will immediately respond and take necessary measures to defend our legitimate rights and interests.
He said China would cancel any commitments to increase purchases of U.S. exports should tariffs be imposed. Jacob Parker is the vice president of China operations at the U.S.-China Business Council. He explained the effects on global supply chains.
So we have to recognize that global supply chains are extremely complex, and any kind of tariff action which impacts the relationship between the U.S. and China will also disrupt global supply chains. That's the first impact. Secondly, the impact will go far beyond just tariffs. When we talk to our member companies, they worry about domestic nationalism turning into anti-Americanism, which could lead to boycotts of U.S. products. There's concern about increased regulatory scrutiny of U.S. firms operating in the China market, whether that be through antitrust reviews, whether that be through local regulatory inspections of emissions or customs inspections. All of these things could be used either in a de facto or a de jure way to impact U.S. company operations in China.
For a broader perspective, I spoke with Jacob Kierkegaard, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. I started our conversation by asking if he saw these latest tariffs as a negotiation tactic.
I think you can look at it in two ways. On the one hand, you could say, well, they have announced they're going to do it, but they're not going to actually start collecting these tariffs until July 6th. So that gives you, if you like, a window of opportunity between this announcement and the actual economic effects coming into force to start a negotiating path. Now, at the same time, I think it's very clear that the administration, at any point in time when they had a choice to make in recent weeks and months on the issue of trade, they have chosen the most aggressive course of action. And I think, therefore, that the administration has taken this decision today to have a new permanent, or to in a permanent manner. They want to have a trade war with China.
It's said that no one lives in a vacuum. We've seen these, as you say, the most aggressive stance taken by the Trump administration when it comes to tariffs and in terms of negotiating trade relations. What is going to be the impact on the global economy as we have more and more tariffs laid out by the United States?
Well, I mean, it's an unambiguous negative. The only question is how negative. And, you know, frankly, to date, I have you know, when I look at the markets today, I'm a little surprised actually that they're not more, that there isn't much of a more negative sentiment. Because whereas we previously, in my opinion, you know, talked a lot about a potential trade war between China and the United States, I think we're now in one, and that does make a difference. And I think it, we're in one which isn't going to end anytime soon and will likely escalate.
But couldn't the markets just be saying, okay, we've seen both China and the United States say we're going to impose tariffs on one another, and then they have a quick round of talks, they back off, and everything goes back to normal?
No, I mean, that seems to be the bet. Now, I must say, at this point, I think that's a high-risk strategy, let me put it that way, because I think the Chinese are going to retaliate. I think we have the Trump administration previously talked about, you know, seeing the $50 billion and raising them another 50 and adding another $100 billion in retaliation to potential Chinese retaliation, and I think it may come to that, and then we will see how far that tit for tat goes. And I think if you add on top of this announcement by the administration of a National Security 232 investigation into the auto industry, you know, this is, it seems pretty clear to me that this is an administration that is going to push this trade war agenda with not just China, but frankly, the rest, with the rest of the world. I'm sort of fearful that we're in a sort of a bit of a complacency mode from markets, and then all of a sudden, the markets will wake up and they will have a sort of a moment of clarity, or perhaps an excessively negative reaction. This tends to be often how markets work, and I'm a little fearful that that is where we're heading.
Jacob Kierkegaard is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
An American drone attack has targeted and killed the leader of the Pakistani Taliban in an eastern border province of Afghanistan. To learn more, I'm joined on the phone by VOA's Ayaz Gul in Islamabad. Ayaz, can you tell us about the drone strike?
Well, what we understand from the information that the U.S. officials have released, some on the record, some off the record, is that Mullah Fazlullah, who is the leader of the Pakistani Taliban, which has been waging a deadly insurgency against the state of Pakistan, was present somewhere in the Afghan province of Kunar. And on Wednesday night, he was invited by some fellow commanders to a dinner party. And that is also in an area which is just adjacent to the border with Pakistan. And at this militant center, which has been described to us by intelligence sources, it was a big training center. After attending the dinner party, when Fazlullah was leaving with some of his key commanders, as soon as he boarded the vehicle, missiles fired from this unmanned aircraft hit the vehicle, and they killed five people, according to intelligence sources, on the spot, and Fazlullah was among them. Obviously, we are still awaiting details about this high-value target that the U.S. drone has hit, because U.S. officials on the record have not released some details whether the target was Mullah Fazlullah, but off the record, we have been told that, yes, it was the head of the Pakistani Taliban.
Mullah Fazlullah was someone who the United States was very interested in. Can you give us a little bit more background about who this individual was?
Well, the reason the U.S. Was going after Mullah Fazlullah was that his presence in Afghanistan was a source of tension between Pakistan and the United States, because Pakistan has for long maintained that Pakistani Taliban members and leaders, after having fled counterterrorism operations on this side of the border, have taken refuge in Afghanistan, in border areas of Afghanistan, and from there they have been orchestrating attacks against Pakistan. And Pakistani officials have been repeatedly demanding that the U.S. should prevent these militants from using the Afghan soil against Pakistan. And Mullah Fazlullah had taken responsibility for some of the high-profile attacks, one against the American consulate in the Pakistani city of Peshawar. And then Malala Yousafzai, the youngest Pakistani Nobel Peace Prize winner, was also attacked by a loyalist of Mullah Fazlullah when she was in Swat in 2012. So it seems that the United States, we understand, has now resumed high-level contacts with Pakistan after months of suspension in such contacts. And the two countries once again are working together to promote a peaceful reconciliation in Afghanistan. And we see that there has been a ceasefire earlier this week by the government. And now today the Afghan Taliban announced a ceasefire. And we broadly understand that this positive development after years of fighting in Afghanistan has been made possible because of some Pakistani influence over the Afghan Taliban to convince them that they should sit down and resolve this Afghan conflict. And the United States also has confirmed that it has requested Pakistan to help in the reconciliation process.
VOA's Ayaz Ghul is in Islamabad. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Here are some more top stories from around the globe. A federal judge has jailed ex-Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort ahead of his trial. The judge cited recently filed obstruction charges that allege that Manafort and one of his associates tried to tamper with witnesses in the case as the reason. Preparations are underway by the Saudi-led coalition, UAE forces, and thousands of Yemeni fighters to seize control of the airport, the vital rebel-held Yemeni city of Hodeidah, from Iranian-backed Houthi rebels. Plus, Oxfam says on the French border, police are mistreating migrant children who are seeking to enter France from Italy, sending them back to Italy in violation of French and European Union law. For expanded coverage of these stories and more, be sure to visit voanews.com or download our mobile app to take the stories with you. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A 2003 report by the National Research Council of the National Academy of Sciences estimated that more than 1.3 million metric tons of petroleum makes its way into the sea each year. Among the tools used to lessen the impact of oil spills are chemical dispersants, which break up the floating oil into small droplets. But once the oil is in the water, it begins to undergo what scientists call a weathering process that makes these chemical dispersants less effective. A new study published in the American Chemical Society's journal Environmental Science and Technology Letters suggests that sunlight plays a dominant role in this weathering process by altering the oil's chemical makeup. It was also found that dispersants were four times less effective on oil exposed to sunlight than oil not subjected to sunlight. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The director of the FBI has promised to implement changes following a review by the Justice Department's Inspector General over the Hillary Clinton email investigation. AP correspondent Tim McGuire explains.
The Justice Department's Inspector General delivered a stinging rebuke to former FBI Director James Comey, saying he was insubordinate in his handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation in the final months of the 2016 campaign. The man who replaced Comey, Christopher Wray, says the Bureau also has to make changes.
Number one, the importance of trying to make sure that we avoid even the appearance of bias in all of our work, that objectivity and the appearance of objectivity matters.
Wray says while there were errors in judgment, the IG also found no evidence of political bias or improper consideration actually impacting the investigations under review. Tim McGuire, Washington.
VOA's Philip Alexio has more as U.S. President Donald Trump responds.
The president wrote on Twitter, FBI agent Peter Strzok, who headed the Clinton and Russia investigations, texted to his lover Lisa Page in the IG report that we'll stop candidate Trump from becoming president. Doesn't get any lower than that, the president tweeted. He added, the IG report is a total disaster for Comey, his minions, and sadly the FBI. Comey will now officially go down as the worst leader by far in the history of the FBI. I did a great service to the people in firing him. Good instincts. Christopher Wray will bring it proudly back, the president tweeted. And speaking to reporters Friday, the president disagreed with the report's conclusion.
Action to that, sir.
The correct
opinion, and that was ridiculous. That was the most biased set of circumstances I've ever seen in my life. Honestly, to read it was very sad.
The president also saying that it cleared him of any wrongdoing in the Russia investigation.
If you read the IG report, I've been totally exonerated.
However, Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer disagreed.
We know that in the days ahead, the president and his allies will try to twist themselves into pretzels and try to use this report to undermine the special counsel in the Russia probe. Unfortunately for them, nothing in this report lays a glove on Special Counsel Mueller or the ongoing Russia probe. If this was the president's plan to take down the special counsel, President Trump swung and missed.
Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, said the special counsel should complete his work without political interference. Philip Alexio, VOA News.
Malaysian authorities are considering charging former Prime Minister Najib Razak with money laundering and misappropriation of property. That's according to a source familiar with the matter. Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite has more.
Malaysia's former Prime Minister Najib Razak may face charges of money laundering and dishonest misappropriation of property. That's according to Reuters' sources. Najib is under investigation after reports that millions of dollars made their way into his personal bank accounts from state-owned fund 1MDB. And last month, Malaysian police said that cash worth nearly $30 million, as well as jewellery and over 400 luxury handbags, were seized from several apartments linked to Najib. Misappropriation carries a maximum jail sentence of 5 years, a fine and a whipping, although the law forbids men over 50 from being whipped. Najib suffered a shock loss to his former protege Mahathir Mohamad in the general election in May, the first change of government in Malaysia since 1957. The new Prime Minister has vowed to bring back the funds that were allegedly siphoned from 1MDB and punish those responsible. The Malaysian government will also scrutinise the $600 million paid in fees to Goldman Sachs for three bond sales for 1MDB between 2012 and 2013. Critics say the fees were far in excess of normal. Najib, who founded the 1MDB fund in 2009, has consistently denied any wrongdoing.
That was Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite, and this is International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next on the program, is North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un any closer to giving up his nuclear weapons after his unprecedented meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump in Singapore? Patrick Cronin of the Center for a New American Security and Harry Kazianis of the Center for the National Interest debate the perils and promise of the Singapore summit. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be men's grooming. This is next Monday at 7:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Once again, hard facts support the claim that the planet is getting warmer. According to a new report published in the scientific journal Nature, Antarctica is losing ice so fast that by the end of the century, the sea level could rise as much as 16 centimeters. That may not sound like much, but scientists say the trend is alarming. VOA's George Pudich has more.
Daily temperatures everywhere in the world rise and fall according to the local weather, so it is hard to notice the average annual rise of a degree or two. But Professor Martin Siegert of Imperial College in London, the co-author of the new study, says when we look at the impact of rising temperatures on Antarctica, the picture is dramatic.
We're noticing the ice sheet being lost, reducing in mass. We're seeing wind patterns that are changing. We're seeing ocean temperatures increasing, ocean acidity increasing. changes to biodiversity. In fact, everything that we look at in Antarctica, and we've got records going back several decades now, are pointing to change.
Computer models based on more than 150 measurements made on the ground and from space over the last 30 years show an alarming trend. From 1992 to 2011, Antarctica lost an average of 76 billion tons of ice each year. But in the 5 years that followed, the annual loss nearly tripled to more than 219 billion tons.
So it's completely possible for Antarctica to contribute several tens of centimeters in this century.
Scientists say the main culprit is the release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But if we act now, there may still be a chance to reverse the trend.
And so we have to ask ourselves, is that the world that we want our future to be like? And of course, the answer is it can't be. It can't be that. And what we're saying in this paper is we need to recognize that Antarctica is changing and is heading a certain way. And we need to act now. Choices we make now are going to shape what the future of the southern continent is going to be like.
But some say it may already be too late. The study shows some of the ice shelves have been irreversibly lost, and the rise in acidity of the ocean water is likely to lead to the extinction of some marine life. George Putic, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for me today. Patrice Martin directed today's program. Vlasko Volarich engineered the broadcast. But before I go, I do want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. If you have not, please consider following Voice of America on social media, where we post pictures, videos, stories, and more. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a fantastic Friday and a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trachoma is a disease of the poor, and it is a misery to endure. It is a painful malady of the eyes caused by frequent and repeated eye infections that scar the inside of the eyelids so that eyelashes rotate inwards and scratch the eye, damaging it. The disease is spread by contact with a person that has an active infection, which means that trachoma frequently spreads among relatives. A person's immune system can defeat a single episode of infection, but in endemic communities, reacquisition of the bacteria occurs frequently. And eventually, repeated infections will cause blindness. Around the world, some 190 million people in 41 countries are at risk of going blind from trachoma. 2.2 million people have decreased vision due to the disease. Of these, 1.2 are already blind. The good news is that trachoma is preventable through good hygiene and frequent washing with clean water, and treatable with antibiotics such as azithromycin or tetracycline. In late May, USAID spokesperson Clayton McCleskey announced in a written statement that two countries, Ghana and Nepal, have succeeded in eliminating trachoma as a public health problem. This is no mean feat. For a country to be considered trachoma-free, more than 95% of children between 1 and 9 years old living in previously endemic districts must be free of signs of active trachoma. In each previously endemic district, fewer than 0.2% of people 15 years and older must be free of trachomatous trichiasis, the characteristic inward-turned lashes, and the country's health system must be capable of identifying and managing new cases of trachomatous trichiasis. The U.S. government, through USAID, has supported the government of Ghana's efforts to eliminate trachoma since 2006. This includes technical and financial support for mapping the disease, the delivery of 1.1 million treatments of azithromycin donated by Pfizer, and impact evaluations in 37 endemic districts. USAID's support to the government of Nepal on trachoma began in 2009 and included mapping the disease in 31 districts, delivering more than 2.4 million treatments of azithromycin donated by Pfizer, and conducting impact surveys in 24 districts. The United States congratulates Ghana and Nepal on this remarkable achievement, which will improve the lives of their people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.